Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
In by Kulusevski.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and specky twat is Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
Nathan's wears glasses now.
Yeah, I so like several years ago, the vision in my right eye started to go blurry. I was like, that's fine, that's whatever. And then it has occurred to me, mainly when playing Rocket League, that my depth perception might not be the best. I was like, but you know, I'm not gonna go and spend loads of money on glasses just to be slightly better at a video game. And then I saw this article last week about this old man who ran down a cyclist with like 3 meters of vision. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I should probably go and get an eye test. So I wear glasses now. I walked out of the optician's and into the shop, and it was like the most overwhelming experience of my life. Like, so I have ADHD, so I suffer with overwhelming stuff, especially with people, too many people doing stuff near me, right? And suddenly I could see everything in immense clarity. I could see all the words on the shelves. Like, clearly my mind's like automatically reading everything, and there's like people all up in my face, and you can see all the spots on their cheeks. It was like, oh my God, get me out of here. And I'm suffering with headaches. It's going to take a while to break into these glasses, I reckon, because it's weird. I'm used to the blur.
It is strange when you first get glasses. My whole life turned kind of weird shape, everything kind of starts squishing in the middle. But it was also it was Football Manager that taught me that I needed glasses, because I ended up just leaning more and more and more into the screen. It wasn't actually work, and then I was just like, maybe I do need glasses, and I did.
So there you go, the video games are the secret to vision truths.
So the reason I can call you a specky twat is because I wear glasses as well, and the last pair I got were a different shape to my previous pair. And I had a very weird sensation for about 3 days whilst my eye muscles adapted to the new lens shape. So so that might be a thing for you as well, Nathan. You might Definitely. Find it gets more comfortable after a bit of continued use. But you should probably be wearing them right now. Like, you should probably wear them every time you use a screen, not just when you're playing Rocket League.
Well, I'm probably not going to do that. I'm probably going to only wear them when I need to wear them. But okay. For the time being, I want to break them in and wear them for a few hours here and a few hours there and try to get used to them.
Sure.
My optician was like, only wear them when you look at screens. And I'm like, I look at screens
all day,
all the time. Does.
Yeah. I wear contact lenses mostly. It's a lot easier. Also, I wasn't like, when I shaved my head, I wasn't sure if my glasses suited me anymore.
Well, I shaved my head, and I could still wear glasses.
Did you, Bardi? Did you shave your head?
According to my wife, I shaved it, yeah.
I mean, your hair looks very nice. I really like it. It looks really nice, but it's not shaved. It's
a close cut.
It's a
one all over.
No, that's not a one.
It's a two and a one. It's the old 1-2.
The old 1-2, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Bardi thinks he's kept to his word by doing this, but actually, it's a bit of a cheat.
Well, I learned from the best, Windy. You managed to get yourself out of it a bit a while ago, so I just fudged the lines, which is what you do.
So why did you save your head, Bardi?
Because I raised over my £3,000 target for the marathon. I'm closing in on four. I might just fall a little bit short, but I'm close to it. But my wife was just like, you were going to hit $3,000 anyway. But I got nervous because after a couple of weeks, I had nothing in there other than the money I won off you, Windy. So I thought I needed something there to encourage people to donate. And thank you to everybody that did. And some people donated twice. They forgot they donated right at the start. And then they donated again.
That's the benefit of starting the campaign trail early, right?
Exactly.
So how has the training been going?
It's been hard. It's been tough. It's been 16 weeks of living like a monk for the most part and running in the heat. But I'm glad that it'll be over. This time next week, I'll be aching, but it'll be finished.
So very best of luck to you and also to our ex-subs, Brent and Dan, who are also running the London Marathon on Sunday. I'm looking forward to giving you a shout from the sidelines. I'm going to be there going, come on, my sidekick. You'll know it's me. Who else is going to shout that at you?
Nobody else, just you.
I'll be in the gym running a tenth of a marathon. So, you know, we've all got challenges.
Solidarity.
Yeah.
And Nathan, you've been busy this week also. You've been on TIFO.
Yeah. So when my very close friend Tiago comes to town for the Stats Women conference once a year, we play the Invitational football game in London, which is always a very mixed skill game. And I literally hadn't played football since the previous year's one, and I'd become quite unfit at the time. And we played with like seven aside on this tiny little half pitch, and there was just no time on the ball for anyone. So I was like, right, I'm not going to try to involve myself in possession. I'm just going to press the opposition instead. So that's what I did. I just chased the ball like a dog for a bit. It was fun. But anyway, because I was in town, they're like, oh, you know, we'll do a Spurs episode. Come on, TIFO. And so, yeah, that was fun.
Really good episode.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Is John McKenzie any good at football? I've got a feeling that he might be. He looks like he can kick a ball.
He is so good at football. He's outrageously good at football. He despite the skills and intelligence that he has in his day-to-day life, he is not the most confident person, but when he walked onto that pitch, he became a peacock. His chest puffs out. He's in his element. He is such a good footballer. The way he receives the ball on the turn, he's like little Iniesta. The way he plays football is quite something to behold.
Was he the best player?
Probably, yeah. And definitely, like, over the course of the four times we've played, he's been the consistent player.
Any other good players?
So people might know Sam Teague. Mm-hmm. He's pretty good, especially in a straight line. There are a couple of Spurs fans. Oh my god! So there were two guys in Spurs tops, right? One of them looked like Christian Romero. He came over to me and had a chat afterwards. His name was Dan. So hello, Dan. And the other was a ginger guy who was tall and lanky, also good in a straight line. You know, like to cut inside. So it was quite funny. I didn't get a chat with him, but yeah.
Sounds like a fun time had by all. Bardi's been having fun this week because Italy beat England.
Well, you've got to take your joy a little bit. You guys got 56 days into a World Cup. We don't have that thing to look forward to. So the only thing I could hope for was to pile a little bit of misery on England. But I am nervous that by destroying England again, we may inadvertently kind of inspire you on towards World Cup glory. Because England normally turn up at a World Cup like, yeah, we've got to win it. We've got to come home. This is the first time in my lifetime you lot are going to a World Cup and you're rubbish. And everyone thinks you're rubbish. So that's always the danger, because Italy turn up these tournaments rubbish and then they do something. So maybe England being rubbish and everyone thinking they're rubbish, they might, this kind of siege mentality might work. And
the
all of a sudden,
pressure's off a little bit.
Yeah, Italy in 1982, they didn't even talk to the journalists. In 2006, they were all going to jail unless they won the World Cup. And in the last Euros, they were rubbish. But they managed to bring it together, siege mentality, and win the whole thing. So I'm worried that we may have been... It's like that thing that happened in Leicester, that bad thing they did in the nightclub, ended up with them winning the league. It's like, you know, there's that meme with the dominoes that knocks one down, and then at the end, there's England winning the World Cup and me having to leave the country.
So Jim Watson said, can we have a tactical analysis of England versus Italy? I didn't watch the game. In fact, I think Bardi's the only one of us who did, ironically. Can you describe what happened at all?
Yeah, England's midfield is rubbish. Declan Rice is he's a good player. He gets about and he gets to win some tackles, but he's never, he's, you know, Schoiberg is better. Who was alongside Declan Rice?
Jude Bellingham.
Jude Bellingham, he gets up and down a bit. He's all right. I haven't seen him properly play before, and I like him, but he can't work in a two. He needs to be in a three. Foden looked good, but miles away. Every time he got the ball, he was miles away from the goal. Kane had a couple of shots. But once again, whenever England win the ball back, they're just so far from the opposition goal. There's nothing that they can do. Saka is a mess as a left wing back. Reece James did okay. Harry Maguire was not the clusterfuck that many think he is. And Eric Dyer looked good. Someone that can pass the ball and did all right. So, you know, there's some bits and pieces there for England to work on.
And how did Italy play? What was their style?
I mean, Italy would have been kind of destroyed by injuries and people just not in the squad. So they put out a bunch of OAPs who were pretty sturdy in defence and okay in midfield. And Raspadori did a lovely bit of skill to win the game. And that was it, really. It was a bit of a stodgy match. Mm. But Italy managed to eke it out in the end. The kind of big talking point was why Destiny Udoji wasn't in the squad. So a lot of people have been asking for him to start now because, yeah, you know, his stats are a madness. So they started with Di Marco, who I'm not a huge fan of out wide, but he looked pretty good. But the midfield is a mess. Jorginho had a good game, but Italy really did miss the kind of Spinazzola, Udoji kind of width.
Udoji didn't even start for the under-21s.
No, that's weird. The under-21s, it was a friendly against England. It was a bit of a mismatch of a team. I think they're playing tonight, or maybe they played yesterday against Japan. But they were just friendlies. I'm not sure why he wasn't in the main squad. He should have been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the under-21, England under-21s looked really good, I thought. I only watched the first sort of 60 minutes, but they started like a train and scored two early goals, and Italy kind of couldn't cope with the physicality and the passing and moving. And I thought that was pretty promising. So I think, I mean, basically it does seem at this point as though Southgate's just lost any momentum he had. He's given up on doing the things that was getting him success. He's gone back to picking favourites, it appears to me.
I'm not sure if Bellingham is a Southgate favourite, but they could do a decent 4-3-3. They could get something out of that, but I just think Southgate looks a little bit lost. As in all international football, you've really got to walk out when you're at your peak, because it's not like club football where you can regenerate, sign players and change things up. Southgate should have walked in 2018 after coming fourth at the World Cup. He definitely should have gone after the Euros, because that's, winning the World Cup is such a difficult thing. And for that to be the only next place to go is a bad place for a manager to be, when the only thing you could do is something that England have only ever done once, or teams very rarely do. You should leave when you're at your highest point. And unfortunately, he's now going to ruin his legacy.
I think England probably won the expected goals, just looking at the shot map.
England in the last 10 minutes had a good flurry. They Italy sat back. They put on Manolo Gagliardini, who hasn't played for the Italian team in 5 years, and I hadn't heard of him since he left Southampton. So Italy just sat back, and England had a little bit of a flurry at the end. Kane had two good chances. Bellingham had a header. Rice had a crappy shot, but Kane took a nasty smack to the face. I thought he was going to lose a couple of teeth, but he's all right. His face is made of concrete.
A toothless performance. Someone on the Discord made that joke. Sorry, I forgot. That's good. I put the game on my laptop and then didn't watch it at all and had something on TV instead, because it's just international, borderline friendlies and stuff. I guess the slight step in the right direction would be that we've seen Bellingham in midfield a slightly more adventurous pick there. I don't know. I guess there might be something to the idea that England used to be a team who were good outside of tournaments and then bad in them. Now maybe we swap that around, but you would imagine that Southgate probably plays this tournament and then heads off and we move on.
Yeah.
I think the 3-4-3 has been really important for England in terms of the way it divides up space on the pitch without having to like do the months and months of training practice to get down your positional play. It's just, well, you're sort of in the gaps already in that shape. But the thing is, even at our best on the Southgate, we still weren't doing a ton in possession. It was a lot of set pieces and being generally all round okay and controlling the game and stuff like that. So Yeah, I don't know.
I think my final thought on it is it did prove that you just can't put a load of attacking players on the pitch and expect the team to be attacking. It looked at an attacking lineup, but it was far from that. And the other thing is, if you lot think the Nations League is a waste of time, just wait until the next series of games when you're in League Two and having to play, I don't know, Slovakia and the rest of them.
My time for international football is draining by the minute, you know, at this stage. And I guess that's tied into England to a considerable extent. I'd already gone away from international football, and then England had a good run and it brought me back. And I can't see them bringing me back in, to be honest, even if they start playing some really good football. I sort of can't imagine them playing really good football.
Mm. See, I find that interesting. Like, what? Why? How come you guys are so disconnected from international football?
I think it's a much, much lesser product than club football, basically, is the main thing.
Because I agree that it is a lesser product in terms of quality and everything, but I do think there's a kind of level playing field to it that you can't... Obviously, money's involved in being able to bring players through and everything else, but I do find it more interesting at some points because you can't get a superpower like City just throwing 60 million. You can't just fix a solution. If you don't have a solution, you have to be smart and work your way around it, which Italy have to do and Brazilian sides and other sides have had to do throughout the years. So I do think it's a little bit more challenging. And it is more of a level playing field.
But then you also have, for example, the fact it's taking part in Qatar as like the offside, right? So there's all of that. That stuff is possibly even more in your face than it is when looking at the enormous amounts of money that City and Chelsea are spending. Mm.
I do agree that it has been a huge misstep doing the World Cup there. And you could even probably go as far back to say Russia as well. It was also a bit of definitely. A misstep. But I do think... That's down to FIFA. I still think it's an interesting football thing to watch. I still think international football has a lot to offer.
I guess one final thing would be like, how much do I care about the nation of England at this point? You know, that's obviously more personal. But I mean, if you're an English citizen right now, following the news and whatever, where's you know, it's hard. It's hard to feel at one with your fellow countrymen. I think.
I think that's a really important aspect of it for me as well. And perhaps that's why I got behind the team so much in the Euros, because they'd been so outspoken on social justice issues. And I found them as a group of players much easier to get behind than any previous group. And there was a sort of uniting element there. I mean, I'm sure I'll get behind them in the World Cup when it comes, but like you both, I kind of wish this World Cup just wasn't happening. It's going to be a bit of a struggle to enjoy it, knowing what we know. But I'm sure when it comes around, I'll watch the games and I'll cheer for England. And if they do something, I'll be really happy and feel good about it. Yeah. The Saka at left wing back thing was interesting. So he played left wing back during his youth career at Arsenal. He was a left back or left wing back for Arsenal. But he's not played there for... 2 years now, I would say. I mean, he's been basically playing right wing forward for the last year. So I don't know why Southgate was messing about there. I don't know what he thought he was hoping to achieve.
I like the idea of that. It's just a means of getting more attacking talent on the pitch, to be honest. I don't hate that.
Even though he doesn't play that position anymore as a man in the man's game. Like the limited experience he has there, is that not a concern?
No, because you just... like if we were talking about a game in which he was playing a winger role and all he did was hug the touchline, we wouldn't be saying, well, that's not really the role he plays anymore. That's not beyond his scope offensively. If we had loads of defensive issues down his flank, then that's a different discussion. But if you're saying he can't attack in that manner, I don't agree.
Mm. I think Saka would be an excellent backup to Sessegnon at left wing back.
yeah. Also, we do as Spurs fans get the joy of saying your best attacker plays fullback for England. That's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Sessegnon looked good for the under-21s, by the way. He looked very lively, which was good to see, as did Jed Spence.
I was going to ask you about Jed Spence because I know you watched the under-21s.
Yeah, he's electric. He's absolutely electric. I really hope we get to see some more of Jed Spence pretty soon, because I feel like he's going to add so much to the Spurs team, even if it's just off the bench. You know, bring him on for the last 15 or whatever, and he's going to add some zip to the play. He's a brilliant ball carrier. He's got some serious determination. He wants to carry that ball forward. Very exciting player. very explosive. Really, really excited about him. Che Lekin says, watching Netherlands versus Belgium, who do you think could be a better option for this Conte system, Toby or Jan, both now and the peak versions? Because Che Lekin thinks they could both do a job today in Conte's back three. So it's an interesting thought. Who do you think would fit in best in the Conte system? In fact, where do you think they'd play in the Conte back three?
Yeah, I guess actually that's, you've just made me change my mind there, actually, with that last little addition.
Because Toby's central, right, in the Conte back three?
The benefit is that Alderweireld could play both roles, right, and that would do a lot for a team.
Yeah,
I mean, Jan's a really good fit for the left side role because of his ball carrying, but the fact that Alderweireld, obviously his defensive tendencies are more akin to the central role, but his comfort higher up the pitch, his general adaptability and quality, his comfort on the ball as well, not as good as Jan's, would definitely mean that his ability to play both roles would do a lot for the squads, especially the condition that we're having at the moment. We cover for right centre back and central centre back. I'm touching the fake wood of my desk as I say that. Right now, I don't think either would do a lot for us. I appreciate they might have looked all right playing for Belgium, but again, I think international football is just at such a slower pace. We've spoken about it before. I think that we moved Jan on before we had to, and the reason he looked so slow and so sluggish is because he was spending a whole year recovering from a concussion because of, you know, football's general inability to protect players from concussions and look after them in those situations. So maybe he had another year or two in him, actually, if he was allowed to recover fully from that concussion, not hit the ball for months and months and rest properly. But now at this stage, it's probably too late.
Yeah, I agree. Jan wouldn't be able to play for us now, and neither would Toby. But I think Super Jan at left in the Ben Davies role, in the Longley role, would be fantastic. And you're right, Toby could play either the right or the centre role. They would both immediately. You're talking about two of the best centre backs we've had. I mean, can you imagine Vertonghen, Toby, and Romero as our back three? That's an incredible back three.
Yeah,
it really would be. Alderweireld's kind of a bit of a cat dog. He can do either. He can be aggressive. He can be hyper aggressive, or we can just sit off and do the dire thing. So there was some interesting data from The Athletic this week released of the most defensive interactions in the Premier League and the least defensive interactions in the Premier League. Romero topped the most interactions and Dier topped the least interactions, I think, or was at least amongst the fewest, which I think talks a lot to the requirements of the Conte back three. You know, you've got the hyper aggressive wide centre backs who go and make challenges and try and put us in the front foot, with Dier then essentially sweeping up behind. And I think Alderweireld could do either of those roles, which is quite unique, I would say, for a centre back to be able to sort of switch between two roles like that. I mean, I loved Vertonghen. Obviously, he's a very elegant, wonderful footballer. But I maintain that Toby Alderweireld is the best centre-back I've ever seen for Spurs. And I love Ledley King. Ledley King is my favourite Spurs player, probably ever. But Alderweireld, I think he's magnificent. At his best, for 2 years, I think he was immaculate. No, just no thoughts.
you nailed it, mate.
I agree with you 100%.
Nice.
Sorry, Windy, I agree with you.
Yeah. Andreas, who it was very nice to meet at the Leicester game, says, is it better to have the whole team almost out playing 1 to 2 games, travelling, training like we have with their international teams? Or is it better to have them at home, resting, training a bit, but disappointed not to be away like Arsenal's three Brazilians? What do we think at this stage in the season? Do we want the continuity of going away training, being competitive, or would we rather our players were resting up?
Jesus didn't go to the Brazil squad.
Nope.
I thought he was like the best striker in the world, and neither did Martinelli. So all we're doing is listening to the Arsenal hype. I think there's benefits either way. I think players can also play themselves into a bit of form, travelling away, a little break of scenery and everything else, unless they get stuck. Didn't Romero get stranded in the USA?
That sounds like what was all that about?
What was that all that about, Windy? I don't know, mate. Didn't have a proper visa, did he?
Is that what it was?
I think so. Him and Martinez didn't have their visas sorted, their paperwork in place.
Loves travelling illegally. Cannot get enough of hopping on a plane unannounced.
I guess he didn't have his Esther when he arrived in the States. But I don't know. I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think the three Brazilians knocking around the Arsenal training ground by themselves, it's not like Arsenal can actually work on anything substantial without the rest of the players there. But I do think Arsenal have been quite smart with a few of their players. Like Zinchenko didn't travel. Partey's come back early. Odegaard, who was meant to be a doubt for the North London derby, he played. So they've been quite smart in protecting some players, but they have lost quite a few as well.
Mm. I was going to say that like training time is really good for us right now. We've gone through a little bit of a rough patch. We've got players coming back in, sort of developing on our solutions. But then I also think that getting a break from Conte football and a chance to be a bit more experimental and free is probably not terrible mentally for some of these footballers to be more expressive. And it's kind of like a mental break from prescriptive football. So I could definitely see it both ways.
While we're talking about Arsenal a little bit, how are you feeling about the game?
I'm always nervous before North London derby. I'm always even more nervous when it's at the Emirates, where we have a horrendous record. I would quite happily take a draw right now.
Interesting. Do you think... So this is going to be a game that is going to frustrate our fans, because Arsenal are going to have a lot of the ball and we're going to have to be used to defending deep and a lot. And fans will be very nervous about that, because Arsenal having the ball feels scary. But with our counter-attacking prowess under Conte and the ability we have to defend the penalty area, do you not think that we're in a good position here, Nathan?
I think that Spurs will finish above Arsenal at the end of this season. I'm not feeling like this game is coming at the best timing. I'm feeling nervous too. Mm. I spoke before about how I think that Arsenal have a physical weakness in midfield. Partey is injured. I hope that injury plagues him horribly for the rest of his life, but I especially hope that he's out for this game. Mm. Because I think that is significant. I think that if they're without Partey, then we could potentially physically bully them in midfield, and that could be significant. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to dominate possession that way. Yeah, we can use that in transition and stuff and make life difficult for them when they're advanced. But yeah, I'm not feeling... I would definitely take a draw as well. I think that a bad loss would do us a lot of damage right now. I think that we... So my argument that I've been making this season, that I made on TIFO, is that, okay, yeah, our performances haven't looked great so far, even though our results are coming through, but I think our performance is going to turn around. I think that leaves us a little vulnerable, where if we get beaten quite badly at the Emirates, that could really knock our momentum in a bad way. And I'm nervous about that. But I also wouldn't be shocked if we go there and we smash them, you know? It feels very up in the air in every way.
I mean, I think we're much better on the counter than Man United are. We're probably even better. Yeah, and we're better defensively than Man United. And Man United showed how you can beat Arsenal. Jesus would do his little tricks around the edge of the box and stuff like that, but just block the spaces and just smash them on the counter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've changed my mind now. We're going to beat him.
I feel good about it. I do feel good about it. So Lloris missed the international matches for France, or got pulled out of the squad, essentially, with a small thigh injury, is how they described it. So I guess he's hurt his hamstring, possibly. I would be a little worried if we go into a North London derby without Lloris.
Oh, fuck.
I'm not totally down on that, because Fraser Forster had an absolute blinding game last time he played against Arsenal.
No, really?
I think he's better with, yeah, he was incredible. He's better with his feet as well than Lloris. I'm not against seeing Fraser Forster play. I'm not saying he's better than Lloris, but I kind of want to see him play at some point. So I'm not too down on it. Lloris has bad games at the Emirates. I don't think he's ever played well, though.
But you don't want to be going to this without your captain, right?
Make Kane captain.
And he's in really good form, Lloris, as well.
Make Kane captain. That responsibility will make him be even better.
Mm.
I would be fully content to never see Fraser Forster play a single minute for Spurs, just for the record.
Yeah, I mean, nothing personal, curious. But
he's not a bad goalkeeper.
I think he's a good backup. I think he's a really good backup.
Better than the last couple of backups.
Hell yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, hell yeah. No, I do think Arsenal are going to overcommit against us, and I think they'll. Yeah. I think because they will have so much possession and they'll get brave, and and there'll be some bravado there, and Arteta will be, you know, he'll feel good about himself.
Around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They'll overcommit, and then Kulusevski will get the ball, and suddenly the pitch will open up for us, and Son or Richarlison or whoever plays on the left-hand side will be waiting to get behind Ben White, who's overcommitted, and will score a couple of goals. I feel really good about this match. I think it's almost like one of the best matchups for Spurs in the whole of the league, tactically.
Mm.
I think I'm going to have a very emotive response to the lineup. I think if, you know, Romero's playing, Kulusevski's starting.
Longley?
Longley over Davies, although, you know, there's not a wrong answer there. If we have something else going on at right back, you know, I'm going to feel better that there's some football that can be played there under pressure. But if we go into that match and like Davinson and Ramirez and Royale are starting,
surely it won't be. Surely not.
No, I'm not saying there's reason to suspect that's likely to be the case. I'm just, it's been on my mind, those two, you know, bless them.
But I'm guessing their central midfield is going to be Xhaka and Lokonga.
Yeah.
That is a midfield you can get at. That is a midfield, especially on the counter. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, Xhaka knocks the ball around really well. He keeps possession really well. He's a good volume passer. You can get at that midfield on the counter.
And provoke him to commit a red card challenge under VAR. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I want Bentancur to be so Latin in this game. Just be the most Latin he's ever been.
Do you remember when we went to at the Emirates and we had Davinson at right back?
I will never forget that performance. It's genuinely one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen.
What was that about?
I don't know. That, like, honestly, obviously I'm biased in favour of youth players, but play a youth player at right back. Don't play Davinson Sanchez at right back. That was hideous.
Because we also went to the Emirates once and we started Ryan Mason in central midfield.
Yeah.
Was it Mason? Yeah, he hadn't started in the Premier League before. We just chucked him in.
Thrown in.
Yeah. He did good. But yeah, Davinson at right back was awful. Something I never want to see again.
Man, the number of times Davinson has been put out there to walk directly into the fire and he just keeps doing his job. You've got to respect that he hasn't like had a mental breakdown over the number of the number of 2 out of 10 performances he's had in his career. And he hasn't like collapsed as a human being. I really respect it. The fact that he can like still have
I want you to finish that sentence. He can still have intimate what, Nathan?
No, not intimate. Fuck. What's the word?
I have no idea what you're trying to say.
In between really bad performances, bad circumstances. Intermittent. Yeah. Oh my goodness. He can still have intermittent good performances in certain circumstances. Intimate. Fucking hell.
I don't often watch Spurs social media content, but there was they had recently the panel event of Davinson, Romero, Jed Spence and Sessegnon looking at their FIFA cards. And at the end of it, they presented their FIFA card to each one and asked them to think about what their overall marking was and how they felt about it. And they opened up Davinson's and he got exactly the same score as he got last year. And he looked so happy because he's had a bad year, man. And he's so happy that he remained at 78, 79. Everybody else went up, but Dave just stayed at 78 and he was delighted by it. Because Nathan's right, he gets absolutely torpedoed into the worst kind of fires ever. And he still comes out being a confident young man. And I like him for that.
He's lovely.
I do admire his confidence. And I do admire his just kind of get on with it and just get through it.
He's a very likable guy,
lovely,
Sanchez.
Lovely.
Yeah, really, really sweet. We are once again partnered with Athletic Greens, so I shall hand over to Bardi.
So I started taking AG1 because I wanted to be healthier and have more stamina. Windy, have you started any new physical rigorous exercise that leave you tired or can give you cramp?
Well, yes, Bardi, I have.
Well, did you know that cramp is caused in many cases due to the overuse of a muscle and dehydration? It means you're losing too many liquids too quickly and too often, Windy. You need to replenish them. And AG1 is a great tool to help you restock and reload your body. It's got all the sodium, potassium, and magnesium that you need, as well as various botanicals that help you train for a marathon or have a marathon session. So top yourself up every day and you'll power through the next workout.
I'm in so much trouble with the X-ups. Oh, God. It's the one thing with the best things. Athletic Greens uses the best of the best products on the latest science with constant product iterations and third-party testing. Fucking hell. Athletic Greens is also a climate-neutral certified company. Sorry, I'm just regaining my composure. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So I don't know if you guys saw this, but one of our ex-subs, Harry Sherlock, who is a lovely man, a really valued member of the community in the Discord, very open about his mental health struggles, which I think is really helpful to other people who are struggling. And Harry's very caring. He's a very nice person. So he tweeted about his anxiety. And one of the replies he got was from Barry Glendening. Do you know Barry Glendening, Bardi?
Yeah. He's one of the voices on Football Weekly. He's got quite a big following. Guardian, I think he's been on TalkSport as well. That bastion of common sense.
Mm. Did you see this, Nathan?
Vaguely. I dropped in and saw a couple of tweets, but I didn't want to give up 2 hours of my life to following everything that had gone on, basically.
Mm.
Now it goes.
Yeah. So Barry's reply was at best insensitive, at worst extremely callous and uncaring and unfair, and then he did this whole, you know, I was just asking kind of thing. If he was just asking, he might have wanted to Google what it's like to have an anxiety disorder or to suffer from panic attacks. That would be my advice. You know, we're actually going to put a link in the show notes to the Mind website, so people can have a look up what it's like to suffer from an anxiety disorder. It was quite shocking to me to see someone who is a big media personality in a community of, let's be honest, mostly men and mostly men of a certain age, sort of be unsupportive around mental health issues. And I think the response to it was really heartwarming. People were just like on him straight away and having Harry's back and calling this behaviour out for what it was. And then Max Rushton, by all accounts, has done the same on Football Weekly this week, that he, you know, kind of held Barry to account, from what I understand, which was necessary and a good thing. I thought it was worth raising because mental health and anxiety in particular do affect so many men. We've worked with Calm through the Fighting Cock previously. We've promoted mental health charities on this podcast as well. So many people are struggling at the moment. There's lots of reasons to be struggling, you know, outside of the fact that you might just have a condition. You might have a hormonal imbalance. There are many reasons in society at the moment to be struggling. If you are struggling, we are going to put some links in the show notes. Have a look. Tweet us if you want. DM us, you know. Talk to your friends. Talk to people you trust. It was quite a shock to see how this played out. But I'm glad to say that the vast, vast majority of people were very supportive of Harry and people who feel this way.
A lot of people have been, right? But because Barry has this following of 150,000 people on Twitter, right? He's gone and he's asked this question that is just like on the line of you can get away with saying, I was just asking a question, but there's a tone in his choice of wording, right? And again, the question itself, you could portray as innocent, but it's inviting dozens and dozens of people to come in to Harry's Twitter mentions and say, yeah, you're right, Barry. They're just making it up. It's just trendy to be sad and all that kind of shit. That Barry's got to be aware that he's inviting that situation when he does that.
Yeah. So I wasn't actually going to read the tweet, but I think now we've spoken about it so much, I will do. So here's what Harry had put. Horrifying anxiety attack. Thoughts a mess. Jumbled up. Wife terrified as it came so suddenly. Head pounding now. And there'll be thousands of people who recognize exactly what Harry's tweeted about. And Barry's response was, can I ask, how does this happen? I wake up, crack on, and don't have a meltdown. You wake up and do. What are you anxious about?
That's not a genuine question. That's having a go. That's having a pop. That whole kind of crack on, man it up kind of vocabulary. Yeah. It's not helpful. It doesn't help anybody. Mm. And he I'm not saying he set out to be vindictive, but his answer wasn't well thought out. And the fact that he spent so long after that going after people who were going after him kind of shows that he wanted
to fight. He wanted to pick a fight.
He wanted to pick a fight, yes.
I have to say, fair play to Harry for replying to him in a genuine way, for taking it at face value and just replying to it with honesty and purity. It was it showed that Harry is truly a really good person. It was lovely. So I'm glad we've spoken about it, because I feel like it's something that, you know, Harry's one of us, you know. We kind of wanted to talk about it, but this is such an important issue. It's such an important issue for men, and but women as well, of course, but our listenership is 99% men.
It's just, it speaks to a larger problem that there's a certain group of pundits and football voices who continue to just have this attitude towards mental health, towards foreigners and everything else. You could link this into Souness and some of the stuff that he says regarding foreign managers, foreign players. And then you've got Barry Glendening questioning a young man's mental fortitude by telling him to crack on. There needs to be some proper rethinking done by these big organisations.
Mm. Yeah. For sure, for sure. So this week we've been doing some Patreon stuff. We had a live Q&A on Thursday, which was a lot of fun. Great to speak to some of the ex-subs. Thank you to all of them for their engagement and their questions. It was really nice. I am recording a Fantasy Premier League pod with Baker from the Above Average FPL podcast and YouTube channel tomorrow. Baker's incredibly knowledgeable about FPL, so hopefully that'll be enjoyable for those of an FPL persuasion. And Bardi, you're doing some new book club stuff.
Yeah, just quickly, I want to ask you about, you're going to admit how badly you're doing this season in your FPL podcast.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm off to a... I don't really want to make it all about me, because I could just rant for the first 15 minutes, but I'm making terrible decisions all over the shop.
There's a few people that I know that would agree that it's kind of karma coming around. It serves you right for picking so many Arsenal players. But yeah, there's going to be a slight change to Bardi's book club to make it a bit more of a community. We're going to purchase a few books, and then I'm going to forward them on to listeners who express an interest in reading the book, and we can kind of read it at the same time. It'd be nice to hear their thoughts. And then the purpose is for them to forward those books on to the next people and trying to create some, it sounds like a pyramid, but it's not a pyramid scheme, but in a nice, innocent way, kind of passing the book on and handing it on from person to person.
Very nice.
The book I'm thinking about doing was recommended to me was Simon Critchley's What We Think About When We Think About Football. So it's a bit more of a philosophical take on football rather than examining a player or tactics or history.
Nice. And that that title is inspired by one of my favourite books ever. What We Talk About When We Talk About Love by Raymond Carver, which is a book of short stories. Yeah. So, yeah, just saying. So we have a couple of bits of Spurs news to chat through. So firstly, we've had some players nominated for awards this month. So Højbjerg was nominated for Player of the Month. Son was nominated twice for Goal of the Month for his first two goals against Leicester. And Lloris was nominated for Save of the Month for his reflex save.
Edwards?
It was the Mitrovic. Dipping
both.
Drive.
Yeah.
Really good. Really good. So that's good. It's nice. I feel like Sonny will probably win the Goal of the Month. Nathan's slightly surprised that Højbjerg was nominated for Player of the Month, or do you think it's deserved?
Well, I certainly think he's been good. I sort of don't know how other teams did, especially last month, and who the contenders might have been. I don't know. We're at serious risk of bringing up the Bardi versus Højbjerg debate again, though, if we hang on this for too long.
Yeah. We also perhaps need to talk about interest in Antonio Conte. Bardi, what do you think the chances are of Juventus lining up Conte?
I think at the moment with Andrea Agnelli in place is very unlikely. The last time that we know on camera that they saw each other, Conte was flicking him the bird. I think that's what the kids call it. So there's not a lot of love left between those two. But there is, with Allegri doing so bad at Juve, there is talk that perhaps he's going to get fired, and then maybe Juve will opt for an interim manager, and Agnelli will walk away, and then Gianluca Petracci, who's Conte's good friend, is probably on his way to Juve, and perhaps they're seeing that him and Conte teaming up again to return to Juventus. I personally don't see it. I don't think Conte will go back. I don't think Juventus have the money or anything else to really offer Conte. I mean, Conte, if he leaves Tottenham, he could go pretty much anywhere. He's got that kind of openness to him. I think it's all bullshit. It's Juventus just trying to scare Allegri and just talking nonsense. Juve, they think they're a big club, but they're not. Unless the European Super League comes, Juventus are in all kinds of trouble.
Mm. It does feel to me as though Conte, and I wasn't expecting this, is talking about his time at Spurs as more of a sort of long-term project. He's talking about how many transfer windows it's going to take for him to get the team to be in the state he wanted to be in. Is that fair?
I think if we finish top four and we have a little bit of a crack at Champions League, or even say we're in the title race come end of March, early April, before we fade away, I think Conte signs on for another year of this for sure.
Mm. So there has been some contractual speculation as well. Rumours are that Kane might be signing a new contract. Conte also. What do you think, Nathan?
There was something about us already having the right to extend Conte's contract, like without his involvement or something, but I don't know about that. The thing with that is it's like managers' contracts and their situation is not at all like how it is with players, right? So there's always the possibility that Conte will just walk and there's not a ton you can do about it. And there's always that sensation with Conte that it's a possibility. It feels weird timing, right? It feels like he's in the middle of a project that he believes in, that he should be happy that we've spent to support him, that he's working out solutions, that things are trending in the right way. Any other manager, right, you'd be like, well, yeah, he's going to be here for at least this season and probably one after that, but it's Conte, so.
Sure. And we get news this week that Kane has been receiving some interesting injury treatment. So this was off the back of an article by Dan Kilpatrick for the Evening Standard, who reported that Kane has been working with a new personal physiotherapist who has helped him to feel free on the pitch and overcome the ankle injuries which hampered his career. Fascinatingly, a person on Reddit who is called Poststorm Blues wrote this: "I'm in the rehab industry in London and treat a couple of Harry's extended family. The athlete that recommended the physio was Justin Rose, and the guy is actually a specialist in electroacupuncture rather than traditional physio, and is based in Canada. I've seen before and after pictures of Harry's ankles, and I have to say the difference is huge. Long may it continue." And there followed a discussion about what electroacupuncture actually is, and whether it's
scientifically valid.
A pseudoscience, yeah. Exactly.
Like wrapping a bit of cheese around a hamstring or a pig's bladder. Who was the German man? Felix Magath. It was him who was into the cheese wrapping.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting, because the first thing when that news comes out is like, well, don't we have good physios at the club who should be able to find those kinds of solutions? What's this other extra special physio going to do that our club isn't, or at least should be already doing, right? So and then this comes out, this has later been reported as well by Kilpatrick, I think, that information is valid. Electroacupuncture. The idea is that he used to have a large amount of swelling in his ankles, and that has gone down. Now acupuncture itself is not proven to have to do anything, although a lot of people swear by a lot of things, right? There's also a strong trend in, like, because I was looking at physios for quite a while, and I was I've worked with now three different physios in my life, and when you're looking at physios, a lot of them will offer these services like acupuncture alongside this sort of more rigorous scientific, like medicinally sensible, and even like chiropractory kind of stuff, which is like the opposite almost. So there's this weird space in the industry where the same person is offering both kinds of service, which is kind of strange to navigate. Electroacupuncture, apparently there are some early studies suggesting that there might be something there, that it's outperforming placebo. But then placebo itself can be quite something, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when we talk about Kane thinks that he'll score a chance if he's missed his last one. Kane thinks that acupuncture needles are somehow even smaller than previous acupuncture needles will magically decrease the swelling and heal his ankles, and then it does, because he believes it. There is something to that. We are obviously way out of our realm to be commenting on, to giving sort of a definitive answer on the medicinal validity of these sort of undetested things, but it's certainly interesting, right?
Yeah, if it makes him happy, like you say, it gives him confidence, then I hope he gets more acupuncture.
He hasn't had an ankle injury in either foot for quite a while now. He's looking the fittest he's looked in years.
Yeah, it bodes well, for sure. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode. We've rattled through quite a lot. It's international break, so obviously no match to talk about. And I kind of thought we might struggle for talking points, but that's been quite fun. I just want to say very best of luck, Bardi, for the London Marathon. Hope you absolutely smash it, mate. And that you aren't suffering too much afterwards. And best of luck to Brent and Dan, who are also running. I hope it goes really, really well. Dan's going to destroy everyone. Obviously, he's incredible. Just good luck, Bards.
Nice one, Windy. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Bardi, and our tactics guy, Nate Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the X-Subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs. Thank you.